I'm Ruth Alzinga, your moderator for today's luncheon, and I extend a hearty welcome to those who are here with us in the audience, and of course our TV viewing audience. Before I introduce our guest speaker, who has kindly traveled from Calgary to be with us, I would remind our newcomers that the cost of the luncheon is $8 per person, and the money will be collected at the table. Lunch follows the speaker, and following lunch we will have a half-hour question period. So without further ado, I would like to introduce John Golding, Development Advisor for World Vision Canada. John joined the staff of World Vision Canada in June of 2004. Prior to joining World Vision Canada, John worked with the Salvation Army for 32 years. And during his time with the Salvation Army, John served in various capacities, such as pastoring in congregations in Newfoundland, public relations work in Ontario, and 14 years as the Salvation Army's Director of Development of the Alberta area. John was transferred to Calgary in 1988. Since coming to World Vision Canada, John has visited Africa, Uganda, and Rwanda. In November 2004, along with other World Vision Canada staff, John went to Uganda to see and understand what World Vision Canada is doing in that country as it relates to HIV and AIDS. In November 2005, John visited Rwanda and saw how the country is still in pain from the 1994 genocides, but struggling in a great way to overcome the war of HIV and AIDS. John is married to Donna, and they have one daughter, Shauna. On an aside, I was in Calgary last weekend and was surprised to see today's speaker highlighted on the front page of the Calgary Herald. I read further under the heading, Major Still Shuffling for Santa. John took part in the Santa Shuffle Salvation Army Run Walk, an Alberta-born event that took its roots when John was based in Edmonton 25 years ago and has now grown to a national phenomenon. It will be staged in 27 communities across the country this year. Pledges raise funds for Salvation Army programs. So, John, you're a man on the move for causes you believe in, and we look forward to hearing of your work with World Vision Canada today. Please join me in welcoming John Golding.
Thank you, Ruth. It's my pleasure to be here today to share with you something of what is very near and dear to my heart. The past 18 months of my life have truly been a changing experience for me. My whole life, as Ruth has just indicated, has been spent in helping suffering humanity and bringing hope and comfort to a hurting world. However, what I am about to share with you has made a tremendous impact on my life. And my prayer is that others will understand and catch the vision and rise to the challenge that awaits us. We live in an environment that brings new gadgets that forces us to change and really discards the one that we recently purchased. Each one has a tendency of making our world much smaller than it was yesterday. We have moved from snail mail to email, from fax to electronic documents, from land phones to cell phone, and the list continues. All of these developments have also made the world smaller. In seconds, we can decide to ignore or welcome the happenings around the globe. Whether or not we accept the fact, there are things happening in our backyard that we need to become aware of and take responsibility for. Last year, while we sat and enjoyed with our families and shared in the festivity of the Christmas season, the world was brought to a standstill. Into our living rooms came the gruesome details of what a tsunami can and did to thousands of individuals. And we responded. Was it because of the time of the year? Were we all feeling the Christmas spirit of giving? Or was it because it made us feel that we were a part of what was happening? Or did we feel guilty because we had spent so much on the commercialization of Christmas, and so we thought it was important for us to give to help this situation? But do you realize that there is a silent tsunami? Yes, more deadly, that has taken the lives of millions. Innocent children are left as orphans, having to take charge of their household, struggling for food, and often going to bed hungry, and having no idea where their next meal will come from. Clothing, clean, safe water, medical assistance is on the bottom of their list. For over 50 years, World Vision has been changing lives. From the heart of one man, Bob Pierce, 1947, Pierce met a teacher on a trip to China, and he was introduced to a battered and abandoned child named White Jade. Unable to care for the child herself, the teacher said to Bob Pierce, "What are you going to do about her?" Pierce gave the woman his last $5 and agreed to send the same amount each month to help the woman to care for White Jade. This encounter was a turning point for Pierce, and so he began to build an organization dedicated to helping the world's poor. And from that, World Vision was born. The first child sponsorship program began a few years later in response to the needs of thousands of orphans at the end of the Korean War. Throughout the decades, World Vision has become a leader in the field of relief and transformational development. Almost 14,000 full and part-time staff members implement programs of emergency relief, education, health care, economic development, and promotion of justice in more than 90 countries of the world. World Vision is a living tribute to one man, Bob Pierce. As a Christian humanitarian organization, World Vision uses the transformational development approach to help poor communities work toward life in all of its fullness. Our vision for every child is life in its fullness, and our prayer for every heart is the will to make it so. I think we can advance some slides, Ruth. During the past 12 months, I've had the privilege of traveling to Africa. As Ruth indicated, in 2004, I visited Uganda, and last month, I was in Rwanda. Traveling the rough terrain of Uganda and Rwanda doesn't equate pleasure driving. But I want to assure you that every bounce, every motion that caused you to leave the seat that you were sitting on and hit the roof of the vehicle that you were traveling in was worth it, especially when you were greeted by the sea of smiling faces of children whose voices blended in a very joyful song in welcoming you as you approached their school. And one would ask the question, how can countries such as Uganda and Rwanda have children who are so happy? World Vision has been working in more than 50 years to help children and their communities to reach their full potential of taking and tackling the cause of poverty. Tragically, the hard-won achievements of these 50 years of relief and development work are now jeopardized by HIV/AIDS. AIDS endangers a family's health, a child's future, a community's effort to have reliable food supply, clean water, education, and economic development. You see, as parents get sick and can't work or grow food, children must leave school to care for their family's needs. In a vicious cycle, the children, especially girls, who leave school often are forced into livelihoods that put them at risk of HIV/AIDS infection. As orphan children struggle to survive, they're spiraled even deeper into poverty. Just as the 2005 tsunami was brought into our world, so too, into our backyard, into every fabric of our society, our lives are impacted by what is happening around the world. More than 30 million people have died from HIV/AIDS related causes, and almost 40 million are currently infected. 4.8 million children have died from AIDS related causes, and 2.2 million are currently infected. 95% of these infected with HIV/AIDS live in development countries, with over 60% of them living in sub-Sahara Africa. HIV/AIDS is perhaps the greatest human tragedy since the flood in the times of Noah. Since its inception, more than 60 million people have been infected with HIV, the virus that caused AIDS. More than 25 million people have died already from AIDS, and 42 million are currently infected. 15 million children worldwide have lost one or both parents to AIDS. HIV/AIDS is destroying families and denying our children of the hope for a future. The people in many poor communities have worked for decades with organizations like World Vision to improve and to provide enough food, clean water, health care, education, and income for themselves. In many AIDS-affected regions, any progress made toward the community development has been stalled or obliterated. Young adults are the most likely to contract HIV. Most who do will die in their 30s and 40s. As AIDS systematically destroys a generation of adults, millions of orphans are left behind. Nearly 90% of AIDS cases occur among people 20 to 40 years of age, depriving children of love and nurture. It is estimated by the year 2010 that 25 million children will be orphaned and 50 million children made vulnerable by AIDS. If the orphan and vulnerable children is left unattended, a recent World Bank report projects that South Africa could experience economic collapse in less than 3 generations. But who cares? You and I live in an environment where we can close things out that have no relevance to us. And that's exactly what the world did in 1994, when the genocides happened in Rwanda. Today we feel sorry, and we say, it shouldn't have happened. Friends, it's not about the millions that I have just shared with you that's important. Millions are numbers that you and I can quickly and easily pass over. We can say 15 and 20 and 25 million and soon forget the relevance. But whether we have experience or not, the thing that really matters is when you have an experience, a face-to-face encounter with one child that you cannot forget, and you cannot say, this doesn't belong to my backyard. Let me introduce you to Peter on the screen. Peter is a young boy of the age of 11, whom I met in Uganda. Standing with him is his sister, who is 13 years of age, who's mentally challenged. 2 weeks before we arrived in Rwanda, Peter's mother had died. His dad died 2 years prior to that. We took a very quick look into the hut that Peter lives in and found there was absolutely nothing. We asked what happened to the cooking utensils that they might have had, and the response was, I sold it so that I could help my mom with medical needs. Peter is someone that lives constantly in my mind and my heart. I cannot understand or fathom how a 11-year-old boy can take the responsibility of his 13-year-old mentally challenged sister and survive. But I left Peter that day with the consolation of knowing that on the ground in Uganda there were people that were going to ensure that Peter and his sister was provided for. Do you realize that right now there is a silent genocide that is happening in our world? The mass massacre and war of the genocides of 1994 might be over, but the effects are still the same. Here on the screen in front of you is the church where more than 10,000 people were massacred. I've got more pictures, but I didn't feel that they were appropriate to share with you today. But when you walked into that church and saw in front of the church the altar and the cloth that was supposed to be white, like the cloth on our table today, but it is stained completely from the blood of people who were martyred and destroyed in that very gruesome incident. That genocide is still finding and having its impact on the country that struggles to move ahead. Let me introduce to you a gal, 18 years of age, who lives with four of her siblings. She is HIV positive. It is believed that she was raped during the genocides. But look at the frightened look on the child's face. How can this not haunt and disturb our spirit? Next is John 14, sits in the center with two siblings. We ask them, what would make your life better today? Chantal, on the far left, replied by saying, if only we had plates so we could eat our food off. Which prompted one of the group to ask, and do you have food in the house? And John replied, no, but in the morning I will get firewood and I will go to the market to sell it. To which we immediately responded and went to the market and ensured that they had enough food for a month. The challenge is huge and daunting, but we believe it can and must be addressed. World Vision has a plan to reduce the spread and the social impact of HIV/AIDS. We want to make a crucial sociable investment in the potential of communities where we work and in their future. Hand in hand with our parent communities, we feel that HIV/AIDS crises, and we're going to face it with determination and hope. Our vision is used and our plan is real. One community at a time. We will turn the tide of this pandemic, focusing on prevention, care, and advocacy. We'll provide the essential programs that enable people to mobilize and confront HIV/AIDS. Prevention, girls and boys, pregnant women, most at-risk population, value-based life skills training for children between the ages of 3 to 15, teaching topics such as self-esteem, friendship, sexuality, HIV/AIDS prevention and choices and consequences. Care. Orphan children living with HIV/AIDS and other children made vulnerable by AIDS and their household. Continually monitoring the child's well-being. Home-based care. Protection against abuse and neglect. Training of life skills situations. Advocacy. Policymakers and decision makers, local, national, and international, endeavoring to try and change the policies that will help people of these countries to be able to find the assistance that they need in the world today. World Vision has identified 210 communities in the places where we are working. And we are endeavoring to take 70 communities at a time to address this situation. The slide here shows you the geographical distribution of people living with HIV/AIDS around the world. And you can see that in North America, it is indeed in our backyard. The best time to plant a tree, according to the African proverb, is 20 years ago. The next best time is today. 20 years ago, doctors discovered a disease we now know as AIDS. And looking back, the global community should have been quicker to act. The past is gone. But God has given us today the opportunity to help the millions who are hurting because of HIV/AIDS. God has given us the opportunity to show the sick, the hurting, and dying how passionately God loves them. Your backyard and my backyard is included in this global pandemic. The challenge lies before us. What are we going to do? You can close your blinds and become obliterated to what is happening in the world. Or you can take one step at a time and move into the real world and make a difference. Thank you.
Welcome back. I think we're ready to have our guest speaker back up to the microphone to answer some questions. But before I give him the mic, and you have some questions perhaps of John, I would just like to tell you that there will be a luncheon next Thursday as well. And we're going to hear from Belinda Croson. And the topic is, how do we learn from history? And history is our own story, and who we are grows out of our history. And one of the centenary projects included in the renewed Galt Museum and Archives is the establishment of a museum school. And Belinda Croson is the educator. So come and hear more about the Galt Museum and the Archives and the on-site possibilities on their website. So that is next Thursday, Brenda Croson. So I hope I've said that right. And there will be a luncheon on the 22nd as well, in case you're wondering and planning your December calendars. And come January, we will be having some political forums with the upcoming election. So lots of things happening.